You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hopsheads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians and talk about their lives, music, and craft beer. Surprise, everyone. We have an extra episode today. That's right, I had said that there was only going to be one more this week, but here we are. This is the second episode drop for this Friday. I had to do it because Four Origins Brewing Company is finally making a New England IPA, and their co-founder and president, Mike Dornelis, hit me up and asked me if I'd like to have him on the podcast, and I said yes. I'm so stoked. I can't believe that they're finally making a New England IPA, which comes out today at the brewery. You got to go pick it up. I had the chance to taste it having this chat with Mike. Get ready, people. This is Vox and Hops, episode number 193.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Today, I'm with Mike Dornelis, the co-founder, president of Four Origin Brewing Company. I am super stoked to be with you today. How are you doing? Let's start with a very complex yet simple question that I like to throw at people for the past few months now. How have you been coping with 2020, Mike?
Oh, boy. That's loaded, but it's been quite a year. I mean, it's ongoing. I'd say that it's gone through waves of emotion and realities. I think everyone can attest to that. Us, our specific position, just for those who don't know about Quatre Origines, Four Origins, we are a industrial brewery with a tap room in Point St. Charles. When we opened, it was that, you know, that concept was a little bit newer in terms of having like an industrial production facility attached to what's traditionally, a bar or a brew pub. Difference being that we only sell our products. I'd say that was kind of an advantage in COVID in the fact that like all the inventory I had when the bars closed was our own. So for us, that was nice in the sense that it was anything in can was easily recyclable to the market or liquidating on location. As you know, I'm sure you know, when this all started and the government gave the local push, we got a mad support from the community. Just shocking. I mean, you know that, you know, in your small community, every brewery is kind of ingrained where they start up. So there's a lot of like tribal, like just love for that institution. But it surprised me to see how much. Like I had people that were just showing up and being like, we're locked in for 2 weeks. I'm just gonna need 5 cases. And I'm like, what? Okay, you know, it's just like, that's a lot even for me, you know? Like, so it was, I mean, tough times, having to lay off the entire bar staff right at the beginning. I remember that Sunday night, March 15th, just hearing the announcement. And then just because we're open on Monday, having to actually call staff the same night when you haven't even really been able to process what's going on. I mean, at that time, it's not like when they closed again at the beginning of the month, right? Like we know the reality. Masks are now like you don't leave without one. But in March, everything happened so fast, and you know, you were hearing on the news COVID-19, the death tolls in certain countries and raids. So it was just like pow in the face. But we managed, and in the pursuing months, we just kept with trying to get as much new releases out as possible to keep some kind of relevance. I wouldn't necessarily use the word hype, but we're able to team up with like our buddies at Missorum just down the road and launch that collab. And then we released our sour, that's like our non-traditional sour juice box, which exploded and sold out like faster than most things that we've had. We keep trying to get that mentality going. And I think after this last closure, we're just looking at this almost as like, this is the new reality. Bars and tap rooms closed. So let's just pretend that's going to stay that way. And let's plan our production accordingly.
Wow. Yeah. It's been quite the fucking year. And it is true at the beginning, even on the metal side of things, the touring band side of things, and you know, you don't know, we didn't know what the hell was going on with this virus and how the impact of it. Now that there is more of a framework and a mindset and we understand the virus a little bit better, not everyone takes it as serious as other people do, and I wish that everyone did, so I'm just shooting that out there to get
for sure.
And you guys are lucky, and you guys were one of the first people to have that industrial tap room, very American feeling craft beer experience. Take me to that. Take me to where the whole Four Origins tap room idea came from. Who were your inspirations on that?
Well, I think that first of all, like, my partners and myself have always been really big into traveling to locations. Not so much because, you know, we love the scenery, but the breweries that have been influential in those areas. We've loved that even before we knew that Four Origins was opening. Obviously, we had like, we're like, we want to open a brewery. You're not 100% on the brand. What are your flagship beers going to be? What's going to be your mission, vision, the whole shebang? But early on, I'd say that our trips to Vermont and Boston were very influential. Specifically Boston, it wasn't the whole crew that went down there because of some sickness at the last minute. But we went down and we had kind of saw a few breweries on the spectrum of, I guess you'd call craft, that had like different pinpoints. So we saw some small guys that were called Percival, and these guys, we went in and instantly fell in love with kind of the like some walls that were graffitied, things not necessarily like in the place that they might be when they're fully up and running and everything. They were very new. And what really caught us was that, you know, in the U.S., it obviously works different than the law in Quebec in terms of alimentation and the food and the beverage. And we're very strict here compared to a lot of the states in the U.S.
Some would say archaic.
Oh, my God. It's just nuts. I mean, I remember being at Trillium and like literally there was a rope. And on the other side of the rope, on the brewery side, there was a dog eating next to like, you know, like just there. And that, the dog belonged to an employee, you know, like it's just like not on the same page. Anyways, obviously there's reasons why that might not be suggestible. But when we were at this little brewery, Percival, it's like there was a coffee shop on the other side. There's the same owners, but it was almost as if, like, imagine yourself at Mondial de la Bière and you have like booth 300 and then on the other side it's booth 400. Like that was their tap room. It was like brewery and then coffee shop on the other side, but you were in the same place, and it was like, fuck, that's really cool, you know. And we went to them, we went to Harpoon and got like a 3-hour tour from the master brewery, and that's just a massive brewery. Like, some people might not even consider them as craft or what that word means anymore. They're definitely not micro. They're still craft beer, but they're definitely not like a micro brewery, you know. And then Trillium and whatnot, Night Shift and the classics.
You have to name the Trillium, of course. Speaking of beer, we have a special beer here.
Yes, sir.
Tonight, tell everyone what this beer is, what's going on here. Super cool can art. Sort of almost moving away from your standard branding, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, I can talk a little bit about that aspect after. But we got Montreal State of Mind. This is a release that's dropping this Friday, October 16th.
That's right.
At the Tap Room. This one being the first batch and one of our smaller fermenters is going to be a brewery only for now. If people are a fan of it and it hits off like we're hoping, then it'll go to retailers eventually. It's our first New England IPA, which I think we had spoken about this before, but kind of odd in 2020 for a brewery that's been around for over 2.5 years to just come out with a New England, you know?
Very cool. Let's crack these and let's see what they got going on in them. Color's dope. Cheers.
Yes. Cheers, man.
Smells nice and tropical. Ooh, yeah. It's like tangerine-y. Really good.
The stars in this one are Amarillo, Simcoe, and Citra.
Which you can't go wrong right there. Clocks in 7% ABV. It's super juicy, very delicate, super tangerine, right first thing that blew my mind into my apricot-y a little bit. Absolutely delicious. Let's touch about the brand change and why are you guys finally making a New England when it seems to be the way that everybody's trying to make their money nowadays.
Yeah, for sure. Look, I think for us, it was we had a mission when we set off that we wanted to brew quality, diverse styles of beer and really break it down to the balance aspect of that particular brew. If we're going to go malt forward, it needs to have a hop backbone. If we're going to go hoppy, there needs to be body, but not necessarily sugar and not too thin. And experimented over our first 2 years, essentially, with all these styles, anything from an English brown ale to a blonde, to a pale ale, and to West Coast IPAs, and really working on like what malts are we able to procure local? What's the difference between these base malts? You know, there's a lot more than Pilsner or pale in today's world. It's just incredible. Hops, like the timing and the process, like that's the big talk with like New England's especially, and anything that's double dry hopped or any haze is when do you add the hops? And yeah, that's it. And, you know, unlike traditional brewing, things that used to kind of have hop additions later on to get that nose and taste have really just like to the brew day and to a few days after the actual brew day, which, you know, we're still experimenting with like, okay, sure. But like, is the, you know, 30 grams per liter that you're adding, is that really like at what extraction point are you really utilizing that? Like are is there a way for you to be getting 80% of that rather than 60, and then the hops you dump on the floor being still potential, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
So I think that's it. So I think that's our goal, is kind of, we worked a little bit backwards, but this branding is basically saying that this is now the market trend series for us.
Okay, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah,
it's really nice. It's very Montreal, which is just amazing. It's my metro. It's my Blue Line metro. I love it. It's actually the old school metro, right? Because they changed them recently to these new Azure metros. This is the old school one.
All the owners grew up in Montreal in different hoods. Personally, I grew up in NDG. I lived at Atwater. I lived in Côte-des-Neiges, and now I live in Lachine. So I kind of been a little bit all over the place, not as much in the East End, but I love the city, and we pride ourselves on not just being a brewery in Montreal, but with the optic goal to be like the brewery to see when you come to Montreal. Obviously, like, we have a lot of competition, and our work's cut out for us. But, you know, whether you're a craft beer nerd, as I like to call them, or just someone who's looking for a good beer, we hope to be able to appeal to all audiences.
Absolutely. And you have been, and you caught my attention a few years ago. I want to say it's over, at least over a year and a half ago, probably 2 years ago, with Hopperation.
Yeah.
That would be the one that really, really first got me. And it was the first time that I ever drank a beer with cryo hops in it.
Yeah.
And I think you guys were probably one of the first ones in Montreal to be doing that, or at least the first ones to be putting the information on the can. Maybe.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I'm not really sure. I think we like to be transparent in what we do. You know, I could call half my beers DDH or DH or whatever, but I mean, I kind of have more of an old school mentality that's like, you know, that was always there. It's just now it's become a marketing term.
That's right.
And like, what is double dry hop even mean? Like, where are you putting it? Like, if I put a boil edition, and then if I put a whirlpool edition, like, is it double dry hop? Like, I don't know, you know? So the cryo hops are really to say that, like, hey, look, we're trying a different, different processing, like, within the process of getting the hop from its most agricultural form to its purest oils, right? They pull off different kinds of pellets. They'll pull off the cryo. Now you actually have the essential oils, and there's all kinds of stuff. And the cryo hop was a way for us to, like, being, again, fully transparent, was to utilize also more yield in the beer. Because when you dry hop with cryo, you're dry hopping less with this agricultural matter. You get less like clunky yeast cake / hop trub that comes out the bottom. But you kind of don't know when you're starting to get into this as much how, to us at least, it's slightly more refined in that same green element, where whether it's a hop burn or whether it's like grass that, you know, you can attribute to like, oh, Cascade has citrus and grassy notes. Like, really, does it, or is that just the form of the Cascade? So like, we're kind of going down that road and thinking. Yeah,
very interesting. And this is great, and it's as good as, you know, a lot of these great New England brewers that are happening in Montreal and Quebec and around the world right now that I've tasted. This is up there with them. Did you, your experience with Missorum, be, you know, if I can give a shout out to my boys from Missorum Brassatorium, the collab with them, did they help you along with this process of creating a New England, or were you already there?
I'd say that it probably happened earlier because of that, because of the collab, but more also, it's almost like COVID slash like the collab with Missorum slash like where we were going that brought us to this. Because again, being fully transparent, like having just the production side of the brewery going, you have to look to brew something other than an English brown ale, right? Like there's things that we were brewing for the tap room that we all love. And like, I think all the employees, whether you're an owner at Foro, we always like to joke, like, you know, like, shut up, it's still just beer, you know, like, relax, you know. But you got to kind of cut on all these angles, and I need to give people what they want right now, and especially with COVID, what they're willing to get out of the house to go get. Like, that's really the key here, is that before it's like, yeah, you're going to your local watering hole, but now it's like, okay, well, I'm going to go to Point St. Charles to get that can, and, you know, depends what you're brewing, and unfortunately, English brown ales don't usually cut it for most people, you know?
The brown ales have no hype, sadly. People will come out of their house and will come and get this for sure.
I hope so, and it's, you know, it's just the first. I don't think we're going to play around too much with like many New Englands or stuff like that. We had released the precursor to this, and the fourth beer in our new series was this is the fourth beer, but the third was La 54.
Very good beer.
And that's kind of, I like to consider that like the little brother to this in its own way. That's personally my favorite, just because like I like to pound a few, and this one creeps up on you at 7%. So
yes, they tend to do that. Why do they get
us?
Yeah,
I know.
Take me to your very first beer. Do you remember your first experience with beer, Mike?
Wow. Well, if I have to go back way in there, it was probably asking my dad to taste his Blue Dry 6.1. And I swore that I would never drink beer again. It was just so bad in the moment. I mean, you have to admit, you're young and your taste, you're just not ready for basically like malt liquor that's not called malt liquor. Okay, so like fast forward a little bit. I think there were two beers for me that defined me wanting to get into this. Funny enough, both of them in the stout family. Even though that's not some, like that's going to be part of the new series, is going to be whether it's chocolate coffee and imperial stouts and this whole thing, pastries, shit like that, the trend. But Saint Amboise oatmeal stout and aphrodisiac from Dude,
yeah, 100%. That was one of my first, for sure. My wife, who we've been together for many, many years, she picked it up because of the artwork, and
that's it,
you know. And it's a chocolate stout, a stout with cacao.
Yeah, I think there's some vanilla as well in there.
That's right. So she was like, this is gonna work for me, and it was delicious. And that's really what got me going on craft beer way back in the day. That's crazy.
It's funny because I remember my buddy coming over with we were like, hey, let's do a food beer pairing, you know. And he brought tiramisu, and we paired it with that beer, and that was just like mind-boggling, you know?
Perfect. I have a funny story that I have to share with everyone, because I like to be transparent as well. I told you this at La Cuvée when we met face-to-face, and I think it's a funny story, and I like to be honest on my podcast. So here it is. We have people that link us together. The 6 degree of separation in this world is crazy. There's Daniel Lantier and Joanne Dubuc, who you are related to, am I correct?
Yeah, so Danielle is my girlfriend's father.
There you go. So he is my wife's mother is related to Joanne. So I was over at their house. It was before I had the podcast. I was into craft beer, and Jessica's father, my wife, knows that I am into craft beer. We would share beers at the time. And Danielle was like, "Oh, you like craft beer, you know, for Origin." And I was like, "Yeah, I don't really like them." This is many years ago. And then he was like, "Oh, well, I know the owner." And I was like, "Damn it." Damn it, I burned a bridge. I'm horrible. So many years, and then I discovered Hopperation, and then everything changed. And but I like to be transparent. And I heard, and I it was recently, or it's going to be Joanne's birthday soon. So happy birthday, Joanne, if you ever do listen to this.
I'll make sure they do. Yeah, I think we had that conversation at La Cuvée. Eh? Yeah,
I'm just like that. I have to be honest with people. It's how
for sure,
I am.
Man.
Let's talk about hype and trends. You mentioned pastry stouts. I feel like the bubble is going to burst eventually. There are far too many breweries that are opening up, trying to survive on haze and hype and doing all these crazy beers. How do you feel about all that?
100%. It's going to... sorry, that wasn't a joke for burst, but that just kind of happened. But,
I'm keeping it.
Good. No, I think it's going to evolve. I said all those things, but I really think that, and I think I speak for the whole team when I say that there's probably going to be 2 to 3 main focuses with this new series, and it's going to be hops. The only time that I'd ride a wave of like doing something like, you know, the guys at Buck Canada with Hypa and, you know, different iterations of the same concept would really be the same way they do it, where, you know, in the hopes of educating the public on what different combinations do. And then try to get people, you know, people come into the tap room and they're like, "Hey, does any of the beers have Citra?" And then I'm like, can you name me 2 descriptors? And they get the citrus, obviously, but then, you know, the second one falls, and I'm like, that's not how I want this to continue. And I don't think it can continue like that, because then unfortunately the bubble will burst. But what's going to hold it together is people identifying that they like certain things within the product because they understand it and it speaks to them. So, you know, eventually down the road when it's like, yeah, this has Amarillo, Citra, Simcoe, I'm maybe going to put one of those in the forefront and be like, the star of this trio is, and maybe why, and be very transparent. Like, where is it in the process that makes it unique? And why is this one, you know, maybe as much as this is 50% of the tri blend, which means that it's not a third, a third, a third. It is the star. And I think people need to know more that kind of thing. So hops, kettle sours and gozas are something that we really want to like double down on, because I think that opposite to a bubble or a trend, I think that that's the direction, that easy drinking, funky craft is going, is acidity and salt, which is like different. And even in the pastry stouts, like, I'm not talking like, why am I going to go make a 10% chocolate donut pastry, which maybe I will, but I'd maybe want to do one at like just 5% and maybe get some of that, like maybe salt it up like with a goza technique. And, you know, get that like salinity. Like, I remember talking to Noah from Beerism back in the day when I was doing my Oreo stout. And one of his biggest comments was like, I love the salt. Like, I actually get the sodium from the cookies that's like going in there. And it's like, it adds another dimension to what would normally be round, you know?
Just sweet.
That's it. And like, sugar. That's the bubble, just sugar. The bubble is the sugar bubble. It can't continue. It's not, you're moving away from beer. It's awesome, but you are in moving away from beer. We have to be honest with each other. We're going to an alternative, like beer beverage, right?
Especially with all these fruit purees in the beers, which are delicious and I love them, but it's very far from the German law of purity of beer.
<That's it. laughs> I mean, the Germans have to kind of get with the 2020 movement as well. So let's be, you know, like, there's a middle ground here.
But do you think that I, you know, me and being a musician, I always think about the correlation between craft beer and brewing and being a musician and being in a band. And because of the internet, there are just far too many bands out there. So it's hard to find and love and discover something new that's amazing. Are you worried that the same thing is going to happen in the world of craft beer? Because there, everybody and their brother is starting a brewery. There's only so much you know, shelf space if you are getting that distribution. There's only so much market space. So how are people going to continue to stand out?
Look, I mean, in that analogy, I mean, let's you talk about like music in the internet era, right? Like, sure, I might have the MP3 for like Queen's entire discography, but I also have the vinyl, and I'll still listen to that more than I would any of the crap that I can find on Spotify today. Excuse me, I'm sure there's a lot of gold out there, but like, that's the same way we think about beer, is, and that's the reason we have a classic series and an innovative arm, is because, like, I want to have people like talk about and drink this with a group of people. But like, once you're done doing your five beer tasting, and you're not done, well, then you're gonna reach into that other cooler and you're gonna grab the grounding beer, which is what we call it. And it's, every brewery needs grounding beers. You need to have a style guideline, just like a good musician is not necessarily limited to like the same thing over and over again, I think. And there's like, obviously they're in a genre, but they push boundaries, and they'll change and adapt, and you know, one album to the next is gonna evolve. And those are the people who end up having like, you know, more than the one song, and maybe like decades. So
that's very interesting. So like breweries that are just chasing hype versus breweries that are setting their foundation, building it upon flagships, and then innovating themselves little by little, will have more of a secure future, you think?
That's the way that I see it. And like, to be honest, you know, I can chase the hype rainbow like all day, but like, can you brew a pale ale? Can you brew a blonde? Can you brew a brown ale? Can you brew a white, a wit, whatever you want to call it? And like, can you do it without the fruit, without the hops, without the lactose, without the vanilla beans? And like, you know what? Maybe you don't want to, and that's perfectly fine. But like, longevity in this industry with all the brands, just for me, it's like I'm looking at it and I'm like, for sure, back in the day, there were less brands, but these guys are still here. Like, I'm not going to name names, but there are some big freaking brands out there that I don't like anything they do. But they're there, and they take up a huge facing, and that's because like, we don't talk about it, but they've attracted the 90% of beer drinkers and not the 10% of, you know, aficionados. So like, but I don't see it like that. It's just we see 100% beer drinkers. And it's like, why? Yeah, like sell to both. Like, why do you have to only do one, you know?
That's very cool. And it's cool. You guys were inspired heavily from the Boston and the Vermont scene, a place where they typically don't have flagships.
Correct.
But you guys still move forward with that, which is cool.
Yeah, we did, because at the end of the day, Quebec is not those states. And we have a great beer scene here, and it's honestly getting better at a very accelerated rate. Like,
it's crazy.
I'm surprised how fast I find that the quality is going up. But at the end of the day, we also have, like, you know, we're one of the only places that has like a red, like a Rus is not, you go elsewhere and it might be a brown. And we have this color-coded system in Quebec that is not going away. And new breweries, even new craft breweries, do it. Like, their IPA is green, their white is white, their red's red, their brown's brown, their noir is noir. And it's engraved in the culture here. And like, the colors aren't going to go away. So putting DDH with a cool design, you know, for 9 out of 10 people, that might not mean anything.
That's true. It's Vox and Hops, so we have to talk about metal a little bit. Mike, have you ever listened to metal? And if so, what bands would you have been listening to?
man, I'm so, I feel like ashamed compared to what you, to maybe your regular guests on here. Honestly, I only know the classics. Like, I don't even know if this would be metal, but like, I used to listen to for like maybe 2.5 years, like Metallica and these guys, but like, that's really the only place that I ventured there. I was into like some more hard rock, I guess, but like not so much the metal scene.
That's perfectly fine. Do you have a brewing playlist when you're in the brewery and there's, you guys are brewing? Do you guys listen to music, and what bands would be on that playlist?
Oh, we're like really a bunch of 90s kids. Like, so I mean, it's more that mix, anything from like R&B, like classic rap, hip hop, to some of the more funkier jams that like would across like some kind of disco 80s 90s, like just when they started figuring out instrumentation that wasn't like what do you call it when your voice, like the thing that changes your voice, there,
the auto tune,
that was it, and they were first figuring that out, like some of the crazy shit you would find on like the party mixes and all that, you know.
Sounds like a nightmare, but
oh, it is. That's my cue to go, is what I always say. So.
You guys have done some collabs with Masorum. Who else have you guys done collabs with? And have you ever thought about doing a collab with a band from Montreal? You guys do a lot of stuff. Your whole like motto on the cans and on your site, everything says that you guys want to innovate and collaborate with local businesses. And there's a bunch of Montreal bands out there that you guys could collaborate with. So have you ever thought of that?
You know, it's come up. One of the earlier concepts for the Tap Room was to have a weekly band that would take place. We had some permitting issues at the beginning, and I mean, we opened in 2018 and 2019. The street St. Patrick in front of us was torn up and blocked off both years, and then in 2020 COVID hit, so we've actually never seen a summer before. But
wow.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts. But yeah, we've talked about it. I mean, we've done a collab with Abordage and Sutton. We did one with Avant-Garde. We actually went to Helm and we did a beer with them over there. We haven't been out as much. I had a lot of plans this year. We were supposed to do at least 4 collabs. I arranged a lot at the Chambly Festival last year. And unfortunately, all that fell through. We're still looking to do it at the end of the year. But we've also collabed with the local coffee company, chocolate, local, Cacao 70.
For caffeine?
Caffeine, yeah. Caffeine, they're actually neighbors of Masorum.
Oh, very cool.
They're within the same kind of building. Yeah, and I still plan on doing that more, especially with the new series. But I'd be super open to it. There'd have to be some kind of synergy and some kind of link. It wouldn't have to be much. And it would most likely, these kind of things for us are most likely seasonals, right? And I'd be happy to release it on an annual basis. People love it. But whether I would have the collab as like one of the mains, I think it would actually be fun if it just kept coming back when people want it. And, you know, so.
Scarcity. It makes people, you know, and then a sense of familiarity too. Just like your pumpkin porter just dropped. Which I've been stouting. That's not the right word. Spouting that it's one of my favorites from Quebec. It's really fantastic.
Yeah, thanks, man. I mean, that's didn't want to mention it before, but if I had a third beer to choose that kind of changed my perspective was it's called Night O' the Moon from Elysian. When I tasted that beer. That's Nightmare's complete influence, is that one product. I don't think I'm there yet. There's still like a thickness thing that they have that's like probably gonna sell less well, but it's just the best thing that ever tasted. Like, it's incredible. And I found out that these breweries in the US were like dropping like 8 pumpkin beers. And in 2018, we started Pumpkin Fest with Nightmare. Where we did a week-long thing where we had DJs, a Halloween costume dress-up party at the brewery. We did like a paint night. We wanted to do, this year we're going to do like a pumpkin carving as much as the liability would cover that. But we released 2 beers in 2019 and I wanted to do more this year. Like I wanted to go to like 4, so we'll have to catch up for that next year. But Yeah, pumpkin beers don't need to be like gourds, you know? It could just be like a fun mix and get a little pumpkin. It doesn't have to taste like pumpkin.
Absolutely, and I agree with that. And keep it going, and I'm excited for those four next year. Innovate, challenge yourself. I love it. One last question. I like to wrap up with this is, it probably never happens because you're very organized and you're a brewer, you know, you're involved in a brewer and you have to be professional, but it happens to everyone every once in a while. Mike, what is your hangover cure?
Work. Like, no joke. I'm the only one that sees it this way, but like, probably one of the only people you'll see that, like, if I somehow get to the brewery at like 7 a.m. on the dot, probably there was some beers in there before.
Wow.
Like, I have this thing where I have to, you just keep going and then you sleep really well the next night.
Absolutely. And it is true that getting up and working and doing something is better than just sitting in it. Because you end up suffering, you're realizing how much you're suffering versus just keeping yourself busy.
Physical work, I would say, not something behind the computer. That's useless. That's completely useless.
Absolutely. Mike, thank you so much for taking the time, having a chat with me, talking about Four Origins Brewing. They just launched this brew, Montreal State of Mind. Head over to the brewery, pick it up, people. It is fantastic. It is up there with the best of them that I've been tasting coming out from here in Quebec, and I suggest that you guys pick it up as well. Cheers, Mike.
Awesome. Cheers, man.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. What a great chat with Mike. I loved his vision. I loved how he has a plan for his brewery. I loved how he hasn't deviated from that. I love how when he feels like he's ready, he's finally embarking on the hype train. Cheers to Mike. Cheers to Four Origins Brewing Company. I wish them a long life, and I am a fan. I am going to support them 1,000%. You should too. Head on over there today. Pick up the Montreal State of Mind New England IPA. It is absolutely delicious, and I stand behind that 1,000%. A bit strange to do some promo about another brewery, but I got to do it. You have 1 week left to pick up the Vox and Overhops. That's the Vox and Hops Overhop Canada collab, which will be dropping on November 21st, but you can pre-order it now, and the pre-orders are only open for one more week. But if you pre-order it now, you will also be able to get the awesome Vox and Overhops shirt, which will be printed at The Imprint here in Montreal. I love The Imprint. They make the sickest merch here in Montreal, and I'm always super proud to use them. So you have 1 week left to pre-order this sucker. You can either get a four-pack of it, or you can get a single can with the t-shirt, and you can do that in the pre-order section on the Overhop Canada website. I have put the link for that in the description of this podcast. So do it, people. Check it out. Go and get this brew. I'm so excited about Vox and Overhops. If you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should absolutely go and subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice, because I have over 190 episodes which you can go back and check out. I hope you guys have a great weekend. Relax, kick back, take some time to be with your loved ones, do something for yourself. Take care of your mental state. That's very, very, very important, people, and do not forget that. Rest, 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 and that way you can come back stronger than ever. I have two episodes for you next week, and that is the truth this time. Vox and Hops is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. Until next week, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops hits.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen, and wherever you get your podcasts.